Hi, true crime fans. I'm your host, Serena Rose, and today I'm going to be talking about the murder of Kenya Manye. And let this be a cautionary tale to any girl, young woman, out in life. Don't ever get in a car with a stranger. Even if he seems nice, even if it seems safe, do not trust anyone that you don't know. In 2011, Kenya was a beautiful 19-year-old girl who seemingly had her whole life ahead of her. Kenya had just graduated high school with plans to attend college to become a crime scene investigator. Her siblings and parents described her as a model big sister, a leader in her community who was always happy and helpful. Kenya had recently moved out of her parents' home into an apartment that she shared with her boyfriend. Like any typical 19-year-old, Kenya was fully enjoying life. One night, she decided to go out with friends to a local lounge in downtown Denver. So, fake IDs in hand, they set out for a girls' night. Little did they know that would be the last night anyone would see Kenya alive. The girls later stated that they all had equal amounts of drinks that night, about 2 to 3 each, but for some reason, Kenya appeared to be more intoxicated than any of the other girls. They later said that they seen her chatting it up with a man, but the last time they seen her, she was headed to the restroom. The girls didn't find this to be unusual until the lounge was closing around 1:30 a.m., and Kenya was nowhere to be found. But what they did find, however, was her jacket, purse, and cell phone left at the bar. After the girls brought this to the employees' attention, the bar employees informed them that around 1 a.m., Kenya and a man were kicked out for being overly intoxicated and being inappropriate on the dance floor. Kenya's friends were assuming that the man that she was kicked out with was the same man that she was seen talking to earlier that night, and they didn't want to call her boyfriend. I mean, I wouldn't call her boyfriend. So they took her belongings in hopes that Kenya would turn up okay the next day. When Kenya didn't return home, her worried boyfriend contacted her family. Kenya's family started frantically calling her cell phone. One of the girls answered and she informed them that she left her belongings with her and she was with her last night. Reluctant to tell anyone what they were doing, that they were drinking at a bar, and about the man that Kenya was last seen with because, you know, after all, they were underage and Kenya had a boyfriend. One of Kenya's friends met up with her family to drop off her belongings. Growing more and more worried as the hours went by and still no word from Kenya, her family decided to search her phone for any clues as to where she could be. There, in Kenya's phone, was a text message. It was from an unsaved number and it said, "Hey, it's me, Travis, the guy in the creepy white van. Just wanted to make sure you made it home okay." And honestly, just hearing that text message freaks me out. Like, I could only imagine if my daughter went missing and her belongings showed up. Like, a 19-year-old girl, I don't care how drunk you are, your phone is permanently attached to your hand. So the fact that she didn't have her phone with her was just completely sus. And then on top of that, you get this text message, the man in the creepy white van, like, oh my gosh. The police told Kenya's family that they had to wait a full 24 hours until Kenya could be reported missing. Kenya's father, Tony, decided to take matters into his own hands. He decided to call the mysterious Travis with the creepy white van. There was no answer. Her family waited and kept going back and forth with scenarios that made sense as to where she could be. Finally, the mysterious man with the white van called back. He explained to Kenya's father that he had picked up Kenya last night and offered her a ride. He told him that he was driving Kenya home when she wanted to stop by a gas station for some cigarettes, but the gas station was closed. Travis said there was a man there who was smoking and Kenya asked him for a cigarette. She thanked him for the ride and told him that she was going to stay with the other man and he would take her the rest of the way. Now, when Kenya's father heard this, he really couldn't believe what he was hearing. It was just so out of character for his daughter, and it just seems strange. He asked Travis if he could meet him at the gas station where he last seen Kenya. Travis agreed. Kenya's mother was worried for her husband's safety, so when he left, she immediately called police to alert them of the meeting. And Kenya's mom tried to talk him out of it. She was really worried for his safety. I mean, they don't know who this guy is. He could have hurt her daughter and now, you know, is trying to like cover his tracks, or, you know, you just never know. So she tried to talk Tony out of it, but he wasn't budging. He was gonna go and he wanted to speak to him. I don't blame him in this situation. I would have did the same thing. I probably would have took like 5 of my family members. But again, he was a man, so he went. He did say that he was skeptical of Travis, so he took his gun. Immediately after he left the house, Kenya's mom called the police. She explained to them that they're waiting 24 hours to report their daughter missing, but that her husband contacted the man that supposedly last seen their daughter and that he was on his way to go meet him. She said that she's worried, she doesn't know what's going on, but she does know that he took his gun. Now, hearing this, the police had no choice but to step in, so they actually went to the gas station. When Kenya's father, Tony, arrived at the gas station, he was surprised to see police already talking to a man standing beside a white van. The man in the white van was named Travis Forbes. He was 31 years old, he had blonde hair and blue eyes. He informed police that he had a granola bar business that he ran out of a local bakery, and he dropped off orders at local businesses in his van. He explained to them that the man he left Kenya with was an Asian man in his mid-20s. He was clean cut, he had a round face, and designer jeans. They asked him what he did after he left Kenya at the gas station, and Travis explained to them that he went to his girlfriend's house. The police said that Travis appeared to be very upset all of a sudden, explaining to them that he wished he took Kenya home. Travis actually began to cry, and although the cops and Kenya's father found this to be an odd reaction to someone who didn't know her, his girlfriend confirmed where he was that night. But still, something just didn't feel right. Her father said that after the exchange, he shook hands with Travis. He thanked him for giving his daughter a ride and cooperating with the investigation. But when Tony shook Travis's hand, he could feel his hand trembling. Kenya's father later on said that that's when he knew at that very moment he was shaking hands with the man that killed his daughter. The police managed to track down the man that Kenya was kicked out of the bar with. He said that he went back to his apartment with Kenya, but Kenya decided to leave. The apartment complex had security cameras that showed Kenya leaving the apartments. You could actually see Kenya waiting outside of the apartment complex, and a white van roll by, and Kenya seemingly disappears from view. During the investigation, police searched Travis's van. They stated that the exterior of the van was fairly dirty. You could see mud and dirt on the tires, but the interior of the van was fully gutted. The floor had new carpet, and there was an overwhelming aroma of bleach. Days went by and still no sign of Kenya. Her father said that he had a gut feeling that she wouldn't be found alive. He didn't want to admit this to his family, so he started secretly searching dumpsters around the area that she was last seen. When police went to the bakery that Travis ran his business out of, they actually looked at surveillance footage of the night that Kenya went missing. And what they found on the surveillance footage is shocking. In the chilling footage, you can see Travis wheeling an ice chest that is taped shut into a bakery freezer. This was strange because the bakery owner said that Travis never used the freezer. I mean, he had a granola bar business. There was no reason for him to use the freezer. What was even more shocking is that you could see Travis cleaning with bleach. He had gloves on. He was scrubbing the floor, and he later gets on the computer and begins to search fields in the northern Denver area. And this was something that he never did. Employees of the bakery inform investigators that Travis was seen burning something in the back of the building. And it's just all coming together. Travis is looking more and more guilty, but without any evidence, they really cannot do anything. The bakery owner who let Travis borrow her car reports it missing. Travis is stopped in Austin, Texas. He is extradited to Denver, where police have a warrant to obtain a sample of his DNA. The bakery owner actually dropped the charges, so Travis was a free man. And police ended up doing kind of like a sting operation. They were watching his every move. They were hoping that he would lead them to Kenya or lead them to anything incriminating himself in her disappearance, but they didn't really find anything. It was becoming very time consuming and also expensive because Travis ended up going a little more north of Denver to go stay with his family. So they had to kind of pull back. Travis's phone records prove that he was nowhere near his girlfriend's house the night that he supposedly dropped Kenya off at the gas station. Knowing this, they brought Travis's girlfriend in and informed her that she was under arrest for providing a false alibi. She later admitted to lying for Travis because she didn't think that he was capable of harming someone. Travis then decides to spend time with his father and grandparents who live near Denver. Police are certain that they have their man, but without any hard evidence or a body, Travis is still a free man. But this will prove to come at a grave cost for a woman by the name of Lydia Tillman. On July 5th, Denver police are alerted of a horrific crime in Fort Collins, where a woman by the name of Lydia Tillman was sexually assaulted, beaten, set on fire, and left for dead. Lydia jumped out of her apartment's second-story window. She is so badly injured that she is unable to speak and is actually placed in a medically induced coma while undergoing medical treatment. The perpetrator poured bleach all over her body and actually poured bleach inside of her. Investigators took DNA found underneath Lydia's fingernails and rushed it to the crime lab. They receive a hit. It is an exact match for Travis Forbes. And when Lydia finally comes out of a coma, she is able to identify Travis Forbes as the man who brutally attacked her. Travis is charged with sexual assault, battery, and attempted murder. Overcome with the evidence against him, Travis confesses to the rape and murder of Kenya Monnier. Travis Forbes agrees to disclose where he has buried Kenya's body. In exchange, he's asking that they do not seek the death penalty in his case. Kenya's body was recovered on September 8th, a full 6 months after she went missing, in a shallow grave in Weld County. Travis Forbes pled guilty to first-degree murder on September 26, 2011. He will serve life without parole, but will not face the death penalty. Kenya's family started a foundation in her name, and you could actually read more about the foundation at kenyamonnier.wordpress.com.